This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
To as you are, to as you be, I see you are. Four Cubs here with microphones ready to go for the next Cubby House show.
Yay for us.
Yes. Hello from Cookie.
I'm Jack.
And I'm Ryan.
And before we introduce our guest this week, we do have to swear on bear paraphernalia to haze him into the pledge.
Does he have permission to talk yet? Yes.
No, not until he repeats after you.
All right, put your today's piece of a gay paraphernalia just happens to be a jockstrap. Could you please describe this one for me, Cookie?
It is a leather jockstrap with the wonderful pride flag embedded in the cup with a bear paw.
And you can order them from the Cubby House website for $19.95 that come with a complimentary set of steak knives.
And a complimentary cookie. Yeah.
Slightly soiled.
So put your hand on the piece, on the article like this, and repeat after me. I, and your name is Christian. I, Christian. Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
To maintain the integrity.
To maintain the integrity.
Or lack thereof.
Or lack thereof.
Of the Cubby House podcast.
Of the Cubby House podcast.
I swear that my tummy will be full.
I swear that my tummy will be full.
My play will be adventurous. My play will be adventurous.
My play will be adventurous.
And my attitude welcome and inclusive.
My attitude welcome and inclusive.
Hooray! We've got another member of the Cubby House Horde.
Excellent.
No, you do not get to keep the jockstrap. I'll keep this with me right now.
No, but we'll probably slap it on him later because...
With the hazing?
Yes, hazing as it is. Christian, hello.
Hello.
We've brought you in here because your master has deemed it so that you're allowed to talk with us tonight.
That is correct.
Now, you are indeed a slave in this particular instance.
Yes, I am.
And we're going to talk to you a bit later as to what it is like to be a slave. But also on this week's show, we're also going to have...
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about tops and we were talking about bottoms. So I did a little bit of experiment on a popular bear dating website, but I'll get to that a bit later.
We're also going to be talking about what is a date.
Talking about what details should be included in a profile.
We'll also have our etiquette section, which will include Christian on, because it actually is going to be about safety while in roleplay, or for some people, to the point where it's a lifestyle. So that's all coming up on the Cubby House in show number 4.
Okay, Cookie, a couple of weeks ago, I said this. I don't have any status on my profile, so I wonder if I were to click on top, how many more responses would I get compared to having none at all? And I did that. I did just that. What I did is that I changed my status on a popular bear dating website from, well, nothing to being a exclusive top. And might I say, the results have been astounding.
Now, what exactly were we talking about? Because to change your status to a top means very little. What were you doing it for?
I was doing it just for the sake of seeing how people would start to behave different, how people would send different messages, the volume of messages that I'd get on my... Do you mind? That master and slave are playing in the corner of my eye and it's distracting me.
And because you're not being involved.
Damn right.
Please continue, Jack.
I need blinkers. Okay, so what happened is that I changed the status from nothing to top, and might I say, explosion from what was something like, I don't know, 2 a week, might I say, was going on to like 5 a day, or pretty much 3 whenever I would log on, and pretty much 100 hits or so every week, so wow, I've never been so popular. All it took was a little white lie.
So how do you feel now being a supposed top? Do you feel popular?
To be honest, it's a hollow feeling. I feel empty inside.
Well, we have a sling out there and a master, so if you do feel hollow inside, we can fix that for you.
I feel as though I'm lying to everyone online that they look at me with my photo of my hips thrusting, and it's just something that I'm not. And
where's this photo? I haven't seen it yet.
You took the photo!
Oops. Jack, can I just say for the record that I don't think you're alone with people that lie on the internet, okay?
Oh, thank goodness.
I don't think you'll be the first, and I don't think you'll be the last.
Ah, just a load off my shoulders.
Load, eh? Bzzzt.
Flag. God!
You just guys are just out to get me. This sucks ass. Whatever. So do you think it's because it's supply and demand? There's a lot more bottoms out there, and that's why you're receiving so much acknowledgement for being a top?
I'm not really too sure. My idea is that when you've got nothing, people are probably more hesitant to, on a search field, click on not sure or nothing. So we'll have top, bottom, versatile, and have those three, and they're most likely to come up. So just being more visible is probably one is a better reason why it's occurred.
Do you think it's a phase that you're going through if you put yourself as top in your instance?
Well, yes, but only because I don't plan on staying that way for too long.
It's like homosexuality, Cookie. It's just a phase. You will grow out of it.
Yes, after I'm 6 foot under. The reason I say that is because we've previously mentioned with a lot of profiles, sometimes people put that they're versatile because sometimes you do feel like bottoming, sometimes you feel like topping. And is it appropriate now that you've actually gone and put yourself as top, and although you're not consider yourself a top, is it worth changing your status every time you feel like you want to go top or bottom? Or is it worth just, say, throwing it on versatile and leaving it as a whatever?
You're probably going to be better if you just leave it with whatever is probably most applicable. So if you are versatile, then that's what you are. But why are you talking to me as though I'm the expert about this?
Because you're the one that's conducted the experiment.
Very curiosity show beyond 2000. Yeah.
Ollie, without the junk science. So, in conclusion, tops are popular. That was the conclusion of my extensive one and a half month experiment at my own expense.
Yes, and our master's nodding his head profusely.
What should and should not be on a profile?
Christian.
Cookie.
You have a profile. So, before we actually say what we should and shouldn't perhaps put on a profile, what have you got on yours?
I actually have numerous profiles. I have a profile that is quite vanilla, and I have a profile that is very kinky.
Okay. In general, what's the most common things that you'd put on your information?
Most common things would probably be, obviously, my status, if I'm a top, if I'm a bottom, what I look like, my cock size, how much body hair I have, and also what I'm into.
What you're looking for?
Not necessarily. I look for numerous different things, so I don't like to pigeonhole myself into one certain look. So normally, what I put on there for what I like normally drags the crowd that I'm actually looking for.
So it's more about who you are rather than what you want.
That's exactly right.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
Jack, what about you?
Well, I know that I've got a little section of the Cubby House Oath, which is that I will keep my tummy full, I will keep my play adventurous, and I will have a warm and inclusive attitude. I say that I'm studying, I have high ambitions and high hopes and nice big pictures that are eye-catching because gays like shiny things. Cookie?
Mine's a bit of an interesting mixed bag because, like, other people, I think I'm getting close to 14 different profiles now. So there's.
So how come you're not getting laid?
That you can ask. On about three profiles, I've got some of the more kinky things I'm into, but on all profiles, I normally say my age, what I'm into, basically my attitude, and I'll always say that, you know, I'm on ADSL, maybe away from computer, because there are times that I'll log on and then walk away from the room. And as you've mentioned in previous podcasts, Ryan, you get annoyed about people who don't respond to your messages. I tend to come back hours and hours later and there's like five messages sitting there. And that's why I do put on my profile, please be aware that I may be online, but I'm not in front of the computer.
But my argument was aimed towards those people who don't reply at all, not people who reply late.
Yes, but there are some people who do get agitated because you're not online in front of the computer. They're asking you, what are you doing? And they don't get a response back, so they get shitty. So
deal with it.
That's what I have on my profile. What about you?
It depends. Like you guys, there are profiles where I'm predominantly looking for mates, people that I just want to shag with. So the ones where I'm, you know, it's a social aspect. It's got my likes, my dislikes. The other ones, it's got my interests and turnoffs and stuff like that. So it depends on which context you're looking at.
So before you start talking about what makes a good profile, I think it might be more fun to talk about what makes a really bad profile. What makes an awful profile that just makes it go next?
I'm a very visual person, so the first thing I will look for is a face. Because above all things, a face is very sexy. Now, there are some of us here who obviously can't put up their face for legal reasons. Fine, that's understandable. At least have it on, you know, private availability, depending on who you're talking to and who you feel comfortable sending it to. So my first thing is a face. If there is no photo whatsoever, I will not even bother even attempting to read too much into it. If there is cock or, you know, just general body shots, I'll take an interest. I may read a little bit more into who they are, but generally I will not really be too keen on them because they can't show me who they are. I've done the courtesy of showing a face on every profile I have. I would expect the same. And if you don't have a photo, at least say why in your profile.
But when it comes to having a face or not, I suppose it depends on the intention of that particular profile. We'll get onto that a little bit later. Ryan, what makes an awful profile?
I think it's important in a social aspect for people to know what your interests and dislikes are. But I think that, say, for example, on Gaydar, if your private photo gallery has pictures of, if for argument's sake you're into sci-fi, if it's just Captain Kirk pictures, or if you like Little Britain, then it's just characters from Little Britain, that makes it really lame, and you're kind of like, yeah, okay, next. I think what you write in it, that's what you write in it. I can't stand people who are like, yeah, I don't know what to write, so I won't bother. It's like, well, I don't know why I should talk to you, so I won't bother. It's pretty much exactly the same thing for me. What about yourself, Jack?
I like lots of pictures, so I expect at least three, just so you can get the range going on, a few different angles. But mostly if a person has a very, very short piece of text, or which is pretty much, this is me, email me, speak to me, sign off, that's it. It's like, it's exactly the same as you, Ryan. Why should I say hello? I don't have any particular means of connecting to you in any particular way other than saying, hey, those are pretty neat nipples that you have there. But it's
maybe
started...
I should have that as a bear signing guest book. Nice nipples. Great jock strap.
Well, I think you should be able to sign guest books with your own messages. When you're staying at a hotel, it's not exactly as though you've got five different responses and have to choose between the one, or choose between the five.
Excellent, good, average, poor, piss poor.
Straight.
So, Christian, what about yourself? What makes a bad profile?
To be honest, there's a lot of things that make a bad profile, and one of the things that you said, Cookie, that you actually do is one thing that is an absolute pet hate of mine, and I'll just skip over, is when people say that I'm on ADSL, I'm not at the computer. It's something that really makes me skip over a profile very, very quickly. I think it makes them unattainable. They seem to be always online, and all they do is troll but don't actually do anything. So it's something that I just skip straight over.
I suppose most people are on ADSL these days. There's no point having it.
Well, this is the thing. If you're not at the computer, then log off. Mm. It's pretty simple. It's one of those things where if you're not going to be at the computer for 8 hours, then what's the point of people checking out your profile and sending you messages if you're not there? Look, you know, shiny, nice pictures are always good. But when you come across pictures of yourself on other people's profile, that's a really big pet peeve of mine, which has happened a couple of times. And also people that really aren't honest in what they really want, if they kind of leave unknown or don't wish to answer, especially on Gaydar when it gives you the choice of not wanting to answer this question. It's one of those things where you know exactly what you want, you know what you're after, but I'm going to really beat around the bush and not say what I really want. And then after you send, you know, five messages and then run out of freebies, it's all over. So they're probably the top three that I have.
So now we've talked about what is a bad profile. What is essential to a perfect or near perfect profile?
Well, I think a good place to start with is the first picture and the username. Usually a good username should be able to tell anybody else a little caption about a person's character or interests, and having an accompanying picture that goes along with that can really go a long way, especially when it comes to determining who is the kind of person that I'm willing to spend my time investigating, or not?
I'll put mine up to the test. Tradie does as tradies do. How would you interpret that then?
First of all, woof. I'd say... well,
why, thank you.
Woof, for one. And second, that's an awfully long username.
Well, it's not my username. It's more of a quote that I use, but okay.
Well, what? That's not a, if that's not the username, then what is?
The username I use for all my profiles, cookie_DAV.
Well, that's your name, so you get a B-. So it's not an atrocious bear pun, but it's not exactly creative either.
Can we pick on yours then? But Teddy Beard.
Yeah, Teddy Beard. That's in light, you know.
F-. I thought it was cute.
Ryan Cub, however.
Well, my name's Ryan. I'm a cub, and I was born in 1982. So that's how Ryan Cub 82 was born.
Fair call. I think it's about as bad as Cookie Dave.
Well, your nickname's Cookie. Your real name's David.
Thank you.
It's out there. You heard it. You can't unhear it.
So, a name. Okay. We've established a name and a picture make a good profile. What else?
Well, what about the picture? What's a good picture?
Well, I don't know. It really depends on what you're after. If you're looking for sex, then, you know, if you're a top and you're looking for a bottom, an ass pic is great. If you're looking for a top, then a cock pic is great.
Well, which is better, a one from a professional photo shoot or one that was taken on a mobile phone at the pub last Saturday night while you're trashed, hypothetically?
Well, you're asking an amateur photographer here. I'd always say the photographer's pick, hands down. That's me, because nine times out of ten, a photographer will try and get the best, clearest possible image of you and try to portray the best possible image of you.
You want something that you can actually recognize them. You know, if it's a cock pic, for example, you want to be able to see it. You want to see how long it is. You don't want it to look at it and sort of hold the monitor up sideways and go, so was that like a UFO taken in a cornfield, perhaps, because it's so fuzzy?
Touché.
Or tushy, in our case.
Swish. So you've got the name, you've got the picture, now you've only got that little daunting plane that says fill me.
Right, well,
I think that's Cookie.
Oh, thanks. Can we flag that?
No, because it's true.
Yeah,
you didn't argue it.
That swing thing.
Sling.
It speaks volumes.
Right.
It's not slander if it's true. That's the law.
Is age relevant to put on a profile?
I think so. I think that if you're going to lie about your age, then you better have a fucking good moisturizer. But, you know, there are guys that are out there that age doesn't matter. So, I don't know. I mean, this is... All my arguments are going to be, you know, it's a state-by-state scenario, sorry. It really depends on what you're looking for. I mean, if you're just looking for a fuck, you don't care how old they are. You just want... an ass or a dick or whatever. It really depends on what you're after.
So for you, sex is just about the ass and the dick, then the rest of the body's irrelevant.
Well, for me, I don't care how old they are. If they just want to hook up and have a random and then bugger off. I mean, yeah, I like older guys, but I don't give a shit how old they are.
What about you, Jack?
What was the question?
Is age relevant?
Well, I know that I put it onto my profile simply because it's part of my hook.
Because you're fresh meat.
I'm fresh meat.
Fresh out of the Tupperware.
Tupperbear. I'm about as fresh as it gets. Before.
Flag!
Yeah.
I know from personal experience.
Where's your use-by date?
You might... do you want me to pull my pants
down? No, thank you.
For expiry date, please turn over.
Thank you.
Christian, is age relevant?
I think it is very relevant.
Mm.
But I think it also depends on which side, whether it's if you're posting the profile, the age bracket that you actually put in, or if you personally look for an age bracket for the men that you're actually going after.
Do you think it's okay for a 39-year-old man to say 30-ish or 30-something?
Look, I'll be honest, and I'm definitely an older man type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I can normally look at a picture and see whether or not a boy's lying about his age or not. I don't think it's ever okay to lie about the age. Some people believe that that's what some people want and they normally will go younger. But there are a lot of boys out there that like a discerning older man and don't want them to lie about their age. Yeah. So I think they should just be honest with it.
Cookie.
I'll always say age is relevant because if I go for a shag, I don't just go for a shag. I also go for a bit of conversation with it because if I'm going to hook up with somebody, I can't really get to know them and feel comfortable with them to shag if I don't talk to them. So in talking to them, I'd want to know that I can connect with them. And 9 times out of 10, anybody that is, say, older than my father, I generally find I have this big age generation gap, which they'll be talking about things that were on television, say, in the 50s or 60s.
That's quite a generation gap.
Exactly, which I may have never have watched or never have heard of. And that's why I always say age is relevant, because if you want to try and connect with someone, you want to try to have something similar in common with them. And unless they're prepared to step down to your level of experience in life and find that as a common ground, it's very hard, I find, to connect with somebody who is, you know, a lot older than I am. And same can be said for kids coming out of high school. They haven't mentally developed to the point where they can have a mature conversation normally without bringing up what's the most popular in thing at the moment.
Am I one of those people?
Yes.
You?
I don't want to hear it.
You're in transition, actually. You're somewhere in between. You know when to be sensible, but sometimes you choose not to.
I can live with that.
So, Cookie, just a challenging question. If a 60-year-old guy started talking to you about video games that you were interested in and television shows that you watch and you had certain likes the same as him, would you still shag this 60-year-old bloke?
Very challenging. Damn you.
Ha ha ha. Do you want some thinking music?
No.
Bum chicka wow wow.
I think they may have just broken whatever thought chain that he had.
Not exactly. I'll throw it on a different tangent.
No, answer the question.
Well, in throwing this tangent, it actually does answer the question. The reason I say I'm also not happy with a lot of guys older than me, if I'm just going for a shag, is I've actually gone to a sauna one day and done a guy who's was basically skin and bone. I could almost mold him into a putty. His mass wasn't that big. And some guys, that just comes with age. I found that a big turnoff. And that on a physical point, I'd say no. If it was just a pure mental thing, he was physically...
What if he was really well-built and muscular?
Well-built, muscular, and he could actually talk on my level, then yeah, sure. But there are certain features that age does bring along that is a big turnoff. So on a purely conversational basis, if we could get on, sure. But if you're also to look at the physical aspects, there are also some other things that I'd need to satisfy, like they were still very well built. Their body was in reasonable shape for their age. I'd probably still would shag him.
So all you pensioners out there, Cookie's up for it. Bring your senior's card. He'll be happy.
On the subject of context, what doesn't belong on a cruising profile?
A cruising profile.
What doesn't belong?
You don't need a life story. Like, that's wonderful that you've just split up from your boyfriend and that you're heartbroken and you have baggage. No one cares. On a cruising site, I'm sorry to be a realist here or really pessimistic or bad, but no one gives a fat flying fuck. Seriously. They just want to know how hung you are and how
I think they're the ones that are giving the fuck. And maybe so are you.
What's that?
I don't think I have to explain that one. It's self-evident.
I just thought I'd watch you blush, that was all.
Not hard to do.
Exactly.
The people listening can't appreciate this, but when my smile, my ears raise about an inch from where they originally are. So, what doesn't belong?
As I said, your life story. If you're bisexual, that's fine, but we don't need to know that you're married with children. If you have a boyfriend, then we don't need to know that. Cruising profiles should purely be possibly your age, how well-endowed you are, your statistics... You know, height, wise, weight, blah, blah, blah.
Accessibility to transport?
Well, if you don't have your own place, then yeah, probably.
Where if like you can to travel.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. We're going very squirt here. Don't give me that you don't know what I'm talking about look.
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
whatever.
Thankfully, I haven't had to use it yet.
Your turn-ons, turn-offs, blah, 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 that kind of thing. Very point form sort of thing, I think.
So you can pretty much have the mental checklist and it's like, he's out.
Mm.
Ooh, I like this one. I'll bookmark this one for later.
That's it.
Do you think some of those things perhaps are worthwhile leaving out for the game of mystery?
Well, I think certain things can't be left out. For example, if you're into barebacking and you're HIV positive, it's probably a necessity that you should be putting that on there.
Yes. Things, or at least mention it in conversation if you get talking to them beforehand.
I guess certain things could be left out. Kinks, for example, you could probably just say that you are, you know, quote unquote, kinky / unvanilla and leave it to a conversation for people to go, so how kinky are you? But if you're up for that sort of play only, then it's probably a necessity for you to have it.
Don't look at me. I don't know anything about these adult websites.
You're the one that posed the question.
Only out of curiosity. about these distant things that I've never gone.
Because I'm married. I don't know what it's like to be on a cruising site. Get out. Christian.
It really depends on what site you're actually on, to be perfectly honest. I think at the end of the day, any gay internet site where you post a profile is just an electronic beat. At the end of the day, it's all about the sex. You know, we've talked about wanting to get to know someone, are they into the same type of music and movies and so forth and things like that. But at the end of the day, you get online, you can get onto Manhunt and Squirt and Gaydar and all that sort of stuff for the one pure reason of getting your rocks off. Depends on what you have on your profile. Really says a lot about you, but not really what you're actually after. If you want to get to know someone and find out if you can have a conversation with them to then go over and actually fuck them, then it sounds like you want a long-term fuck buddy relationship with them rather than just a wham bam thank you ma'am and it's all over. So depending on sleeping with a 60-year-old man who likes Star Wars and video games and all that sort of stuff the same as you, you're saying that you really want to build a relationship with this guy and actually have him as a long-term fuck buddy, where if age didn't matter and it didn't matter whether he was into Doris Day or not, it's just sex at the end of the day. It's one day and you're never going to see him again. So when it comes to a cruising profile, they're all cruising profiles. You know, cruising profiles don't need, you know, I've been here on the world map and here's my body clock and here's a Adonis calendar for you and here's how many kisses I want to send you. At the end of the day, you either want to stick it in or you want someone to stick it in you. That's it. Doesn't matter what they're into.
Are you into Doris Day, Cookie?
Not at this stage.
Oh.
No.
He can learn.
I could just imagine you in a sling going, instead of K, Sarah, Sarah, it'd be like KY, KY.
You can find our profiles through the website, that is www.thecubbyhouse.net.au.
But I have other sites other than just Bear W and Bear 411.
Let's make it an adventure for our listeners.
Find all our profiles.
If you can find all of them and send us to us in an email, the first person gets to have that person. Is that unreasonable?
Yes, because you're married.
Exactly.
Conditions apply.
Read the fine print, yes.
The hook to bring you on to today's program, Christian, was that you are described as a slave. What does that mean?
It means that I, in the general sense of the term, am owned by somebody.
So does that mean that I could hypothetically get you to help me pick my cotton or my sugar cane?
If you asked my master and he said that was acceptable, then yes, you could.
Cool.
Do you have cotton and sugar cane to pick?
No.
Okay.
All I can say is that he can pull my sugar cane. Wait.
Ugh! Flag!
I didn't even get that one right. I deserve whatever I get for that one.
That's a flag, yeah.
Moving right along.
You're actually from Queensland, so I can only assume that at the moment you're playing a slave for a week or however long you're down, right? Yes?
That is correct.
Is this your first time of being a slave?
No, it's not.
Okay. In the past, what other kind of slave experiences have you had?
Numerous different ones, ranging from being a fully owned 24/7 slave for 2 years to just having casual encounters with certain either dominant tops or masters, depending on what they call themselves.
First of all, probably I'd assume easier is when you agree to be a slave for a master in a temporary situation, is there a point at the beginning where you have to explain your limits of what you're prepared to do, what you're not prepared to do before you become the said slave?
Absolutely. And it really depends on if it's the first time you're meeting this person or whether it's someone that you've known over time and they already know the limits that you actually have. But it's everything is discussed before you, I suppose, step into the realm of being a master and a slave. And that really starts when they put an object on you, whether it be a collar or something that you can't take off, which defines you as their property.
So going back to the point where you were a slave for 2 years, mm-hmm. What were some of the more defining things of why you wanted to be a slave for a 24/7 period?
It's just something that you really know. It's like when you're a young kid and you know that you're gay, or you know that, you know, you want to be a teacher or something like that. You have this feeling that you just know that you want to be able to do this, and you have this inkling to want to do it. And it's really just a matter of exploring it a little bit further and finding the right people to help you with it.
Now, going further and further back, you were talking about just coming or having those earlier experiences. So would it be starting off with something small with a particular person and having it building up to something, that was over time to something that was a lot more stricter?
I think it really depends on the person and the environment that you're actually in. I was quite lucky, is how I look back at it. I was in a position where I was in a piercing parlor and I was getting my nipples pierced, and the master who owned me for 2 years was actually there, and he watched the whole process, followed me out of the studio and invited me back for a session, and it went from there. So I was really thrown into it all at once rather than building up to a defining moment where I knew.
Does that work for other people as much as it would work for you personally? Or is it a case by case thing?
It really is a case by case, depending on the type of person that you are. It really comes down to whether or not this is something that you truly believe you are, and it's a lifestyle that you actively chase and want for your whole life, or it really depends on whether it's just a game, whether it's just some role play that you want to do every now and again to fulfill a fetish or a fantasy that you actually have.
How old were you when you first got into the slave concept?
17.
In the time that you've gone on and been a slave, in the whole broad term of it, be it sexual, non-sexual, what's some of the more defining things for you?
More defining for me is, I think in the 2 years that I was owned with my first master, I was 19 to kind of 22, just turned 20, kind of the week that we agreed upon everything. I was sent to Sydney with him and did 3 movies with a German studio. That was quite a large defining moment in my life. I think defining moments can be good and they can also be bad. I think losing my master, he was bisexual, and after 2 years he decided to get married, and that's when my service finished with him. So that was a very big defining moment for me. He taught me a lot and gave me a lot of experience, and then it was just taken away instantly, and I was told in the morning and I was gone that afternoon, and that was the last contact that I've had with him. So I think in all of my experience over, you know, the better part of a decade, it's been good and it's been bad.
Out of those 2 years, obviously for Australia, we have to kind of define what we do to the government, particularly being males. As a slave, what do you put down as your occupation in that respect?
It really depends on what type of slave you actually are. So there's numerous different ones. The type of slave that I was 24/7, so I was owned by this master for the whole time, but I was allowed to work. So I was allowed to have an outside existence outside of the home where I lived with him. But that outside existence was just me going to work and me coming home. And if I was to have any type of social life, it was always approved by him. So in answer to the question, I worked full time, so that's what the government thought that I did.
How do you feel that concept of being owned determines or influences your own identity? Hypothetically, consider yourself a person with agency.
I think a true slave truly knows that they really don't have an identity. At the end of the day, they are just a toy or a bit of property that can be used and rented and sold whenever it is that the person who owns you wishes to do so. So a true slave really doesn't have an identity. They have to leave that when they sign their contract and they wear their collar, and they just become, as they call it, a part of the furniture.
So does that mean that hypothetically, when you take on a slave identity, that you're also removing an element of, quote, humanity, unquote?
Absolutely. It's exactly what you're doing. At the end of the day, your master, some masters don't look at you as a human. They look at you as a toy or a bit of property. You don't have feelings. You don't have thoughts. You don't think for yourself. You're just there to do whatever it is that you're told to do.
Now, I've had conversations with other people that have been similar. Well, not, it's been more casual, but the relationship has been more defined and recreated constantly between the master and the slave, that it's actually the slave that has the power, as the slave hypothetically can behave and misbehave, and the top will act according to those actions taken. That there is that certain degree of free will that a person will get what they want, only you take the cues are not quite so direct.
I understand exactly what you're saying. It's one of those things where a good master or a good dominant top will know when a slave is baiting him. And some slaves will go out of their way to misbehave or do certain things to have certain things done to them. And when a master is good enough and picks up on that, then he'll basically do the opposite. If a slave's looking to get punished in a certain way because he enjoys it, then the master will deny the slave that punishment. So it really comes down also to how long you're with a certain master. The longer you're with someone, like in any relationship, you get to know them that little bit more and you become more comfortable with them and you get to do more things with them. And I suppose what they call a limit gets expanded. So it really comes down to if you're in service for a year and you want to continue on with that master, you might negotiate a new contract that has different aspects in it to the one that you led before. So you always are evolving and changing and doing certain things and getting more expanded in what you actually do.
So a contract with a master, is it sort of like a will where eventually along the lines things can be altered, or is it pretty much what your master says goes?
There will be some conditions in there that you may have the ability to negotiate, but it really depends on the master, to be perfectly honest. When you sign a contract, here in Australia, obviously slavery is illegal. So it is just a binding agreement between two people who honestly, truly want this type of relationship. And it is a relationship, and that's what it is. Whether it be, like I said, you're a toy, you're a bit of property, whether you're a partner as well. So there is room for negotiation, but it depends on whether or not that was written in at the start. And if it's not, then you just go with the contract that you've signed for the length of period that you've done it for.
Can you question your master's decisions?
Never.
Never.
Never. Only thing you can question, and it's written into all contracts, and you should never sign one that doesn't have it in there, is unless you're being owned for life, which is very, very rare, eventually your contract will expire. So the things in there are anything that's unlawful, that will break the law, that will basically have you thrown in jail, anything that will go against human decency or will affect your health adversely. So there are things in there that if you think are going to do that, you have the ability to speak up, but a master should never put you in that position.
So you said that a slave, hypothetically, I'm using qualifiers here when I don't know if I should be, is rather unfeeling. So does a slave love the master, or is it an ambivalence or something a lot more complicated?
It's something a lot more complicated. Some slaves will fall in love with their master and will want more and know that they can never have it. It's a little bit like a kidnappee being kidnapped for many, many years. Doesn't fall in love with their captor, but they kind of become part of their life, and when they have the ability to escape, they don't. So some slaves are in it just for the control aspect. Others are in it just for the use aspect. Other slaves look at it that they would like a life with the person that is owning them. They would like the love and affection that goes with a relationship, but in turn wants the slavery with it as well. So it does come down to the slave's mentality and what they're really after. Slaves can be sold at any time as well, or rented out or given away. So you may have to serve someone that you don't like, that you aren't attracted to.
Would that mean the contract would have to be redrawn? Or just passed on?
Normally, you're only sold when your contract's up, and that's normally written into it. But in the contract, you can be lent out and rented at any time. Like I said, it really depends on the contract that you actually have. So it could be that master has lots of friends, so you will service them at different points in time. You still have to remember that you don't have a choice in it, and you are, like I said, a toy that can be shared around and used by different people, but you always come back to a centralized point, which is your master.
Do you have any advice for any wannabe slaves out there?
The best advice I can give you is never ever tell somebody that you have no limits. And that's the biggest mistake that all these little young slave boys and kind of wannabe role play fetish boys will put on their profiles and will tell all of these wonderful dominant tops out there that, oh, I have no limits. And that is honestly the worst thing that you can actually say.
Would you agree with the phrase of I'll never try anything less than twice?
Look, I'd agree with it from a personal point of view. As a slave point of view, you don't have a choice. If you do something once, more than likely, if you say you don't like it, it will probably be the main part of your life that you will do over and over and over again.
So does that mean that you have come to just saying, like, for example, yeah, I'm into blood play or whatever, and in the hopes that it doesn't get involved?
No. If there's something that would adversely affect my health or is an absolute major limit that I have, which I know can't be expanded by anyone, then I will say that it's a limit before we even start. And that will always be If it's casual play, advised at the start. If it's a longer play or a contract or a session for a week or a year, then it will be written in or highly agreed upon before we start.
When it comes to BDSM communities, does it fit into that particular category, first of all?
It does a little bit.
Or is that only like with the role? If you were just a role play, like a hat that you can take on and off?
I think the BDSM community have lots of different hats. It really comes down to, if you go to a leather bar, the outside world or some of the gay community think that it's all about bondage and discipline and rough, kinky sex, where it's not, to be honest. It really depends on the community that you're in. You really have to look for a slave master community, not just, say, a leather community, for example. And some people, it is just a fantasy. It is just about talking about it and looking at pictures and maybe having a boy kind of tied up so he can fuck him. But there's nothing else. There's no other substance to it. So it is a very small, minute community that you really have to look out for to actually find it.
So is there such thing as the slave community?
Yes, there is. There's a slave community and there's a master community. And, you know, they have their own flag and their own colours and so forth, just like the bear community does and just like, you know, the normal gay community does. But you really have to be heavily involved in that to really find what you're looking for.
What is your personal motto for being a slave?
Yes is the answer. What is the question?
Ooh, I like that.
Are there any websites that you're aware of that a curious fellow could refer to?
There's a wonderful collection of websites that a company called Recon bring out, and they range from Slave for Master, Twink Boys, Rubber Boys, Boot Boys, Leathers, Hoods, and so forth.
I think Bears is another one.
I think Bears is definitely in there as well. If you want to explore what it's all about, it's definitely a good starting point because they will give you blogs, you can look at pictures, you can look at profiles, and you can really see how heavy and serious it can get. Websites are a good place to start talking to people, having a look at people's blogs, or even just going to a community function such as a master slave event at a hotel. They're not that scary.
Okay, I think we'll try and post something on the website. That's www.thecubbyhouse.net.au.
And if you'd like any more questions or if you've got any more ideas for us, be it etiquette or otherwise, you can send us an email at podcast@thecubbyhouse.net.au, or there is the Skype line,
which is The Cubby House, all one word, or dial into 9005-PLAY, or add the appropriate area or country codes, or look us up on Facebook at The Cubby House.
We want to hear your sexy voice, so call us. Call us now!
Except...
Oh!
Don't do that voice, because we would delete you.
So, for this week, this is Cookie.
This is Ryan.
And I am Jack.
And thanking our very special slave and guest, Christian.
Thank you very much.
Cubby House was made in conjunction with Joy 94.9. For more podcasts, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.